You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And this is Ashley Winch in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, July 7th, episode 3727 by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse world.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. We have a fun show full of auditors today to bring to you. We have Auditor Kelly's joining us, and she's a bridal fitter. It just says, you know what the show notes say? Fritter.
I just read it.
Fritter. She's a bridal fritter. She's a bridal fitter from the UK and joins us to discuss fitting bridles properly. And then Auditor Aaron is going to give us an update on the HRN Tevis virtual team. We only have a few days left of that. I have some strange news for you at the end. Plus, in our Auditor Post show, we're going to do the top 10 most hated household chores. We're going to see if horse people do any of these. That's our test for today. As you know, Jamie is off riding horses in Colorado. She goes out there 1 week a year to work with their horses, and she's donated a few to this place. And the whole family goes along and does, from what I saw yesterday, they had a great first day riding horses, fishing, doing four-wheelers. Everybody's happy. So we do want to send our thoughts and prayers to all the families affected by the Texas flooding. What a horrible thing down there. Texas has just been hammered this year with weather between hailstorms and tornadoes and now this flooding. It's just been a terrible year for Texas. And, you know, so many families have been affected by this. I think they said there's 100 that passed away now in this flooding. There'll be more. So we're thinking about all of them down there. And I did have a friend who lost their house in this flooding. They got out, thank God. And I think part of the problem, Ashley, you live in New Mexico. You're not too far, right? So you have the same kind of things happen where you mm-hmm. are. And you just get those dry river basins. You call them
arroyos.
And mm-hmm. boy, they just, you know, this, the 30-foot wall of water hit. And it was, you know, from 0 to 30 in less than an hour. And it was, it was 3 to 5 in the morning. So nobody was up. Unless you were following the weather, you wouldn't have even known. And you've seen it out where you live, how quickly how do you say it again?
Arroyo,
how quickly they fill up.
It's crazy. My husband favors himself a storm watcher, and he went out recently after a storm to the arroyo just to see how crazy it was, because it's just an empty cement kind of thing. And it was insane. It was completely full to the brim. Water's going like 20 miles an hour. It was absolutely terrifying.
And that happens once or twice a year, right? It doesn't happen mm-hmm. very often. And I know when you hike out there, that you always get the warnings, you know, anywhere out there in the desert, do not hike in the river basins, because you won't know.
Yeah.
It could be raining 100 miles up north and it's going to hit you, and you never hit a drop of rain.
Yeah.
So anyway, our best to all of those. Also, right now, because of Tropical Storm Chantal hitting North Carolina this morning, they've had the Eno River in Durham. That's the kind of tri-city area there, that what they call the technology corridor there in North Carolina, has risen 22 feet in less than 4 hours last night. So they're saying it's a record flood, even beating out the record that they saw during Hurricane Fran. So they're getting a lot of flooding up there too. So we're thinking about them. It's just been a tough year for rain. So we're thinking about everybody there and wishing everybody the best. All right, let's do some daily whinnies, something a little bit happier. I give daily whinny to one of our terrific auditors, Amy, for increasing her pledge. Thank you, Amy. We really appreciate that. Also, Marie, she's the ultimate horseman. We've seen Marie many times. She has been on every one of our cruises. She lives up there in Michigan, and she actually travels the country in the wintertime, riding all over the country. She's a heck of a rider.
She's so cool, guys.
She's so much fun. And she's, you know, very smart. She has a real grown-up job.
She works with DNA and stuff. Yes, like, yes. she's She's just, yeah. Talk about an all-arounder.
Yeah, I know. She makes us look kind of silly, actually. But she bragged this morning on the auditor page that she also does mounted shooting, that a horse that she started in mounted shooting and then sold just made world champion. So congratulations.
On a catch ride.
On a catch ride, that's right.
On a catch ride.
So,
that's insane.
Good job, Marie. You must be so proud. And it's always cool when you start a horse and then they go on to do great things. And Jennifer had a couple horses that did that. She always liked starting them and then selling them. And she had a couple that went to advanced level in eventing. So, you always follow and you always watch along. And Marie, we're proud of you. And Marie's also going on the cruise next year. So I'm looking forward to seeing you in Alaska,
fun.
Marie. We're trying to get some rides set up in Alaska too, Marie, because I don't know that you've ever ridden in Alaska. So we're trying to get that done. I'm working on that this week. All right, your turn.
I am very excited to dedicate my daily Winnie to my perfect angel baby wild animal, Levi, who is turning one on Wednesday.
Oh, my God. You just had that baby.
Time's not real.
You just had
time
that baby.
Time isn't real.
You just got pregnant, actually. I remember when you told me you were pregnant.
I cannot believe that it's been a year. It's crazy. And he just started walking last week. His top teeth are coming in. Like, we are charging all the way into being a toddler.
Wow. And you just got back from vacation, too.
I did. We went down to Galveston and we got a big beach house. And folks on last year's cruise will remember meeting my dear friend, Shay, who is a hoot and a hauler. Her and her whole family came over from Louisiana, and then one of my college girlfriends and her husband came, and it was just so much fun to get out of the office, catch some rays, catch some waves, catch a buzz, because you guys know me. there was some day drinking involved.
You had something happen, though, that none of us wants to happen.
Yeah, I did. I got a real solid jellyfish sting.
You did. You showed me a picture of your leg. You got a good.
It was really bad. And I went to the beach by myself. We got in on Saturday and we went out to
dinner.
Keep
in mind, people,
she's
a Florida girl. She's been in the water her whole life. Yeah.
But I was like, I got to get in the ocean. Like, so Zach and Levi went back to the house. I walked down to the water, went to take a dip. I was not even in waist deep water and I feel it. And anyone who's gotten a jellyfish sting, it feels like an electric punch to that muscle. And it was on my left calf. And then I had to like hobble my butt back home, And Zach comes, he's like, well, I can pee on it if you want. I said, no, thank you. No, thank you. I'm fine without that.
It is supposed to work.
What I was so scared of was, oh my gosh, are these jellyfish riddled waters? Now I have my friend's kids are coming.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have Levi in your arms. Hanging him in the water, right?
I know. Well, because I have to make a joke of everything. I said, well, the jellyfish probably saw my giant jellyfish tattoo and just wanted to give me a hug.
That's it. I forgot you had a giant jellyfish tattoo on your side.
It's my fault.
Yeah, that's right. They were just mating. So you were...
That's it. Just had some fun on my leg. And I still have a mark. It's like the skin has gone necrotic where the tentacles
stung. They say that happens. Yeah.
It's wild. It's pretty wild. But nobody else got stung. Thank God. Thank God. I told Zach, I'm glad it's me over anybody else. Because if it was him, Lord knows he'd be crying about it the entire vacation.
That's what we
know. And I just toughened up and went right along.
How many days did it hurt?
24 hours, I would say. I mean, it was really, really painful for the first like 4 hours. I did pour beer on it. I'm sure that helped.
Couldn't hurt.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. You deserved a vacation.
Thank you.
I'm glad you had fun. I've never been to Galveston. A lot of cruises go out of Galveston. You might have seen a ship or two heading out.
We did. Yeah. The cute little downtowny area is right next to, I think it's the Disney port. And it was super duper cute. All the little shoppies selling things you don't need.
Yeah. Right. typical cruise port. Yep. And about 25 overly expensive jewelry stores.
Oh, yeah. My yeah. gosh. We even went in a Christmas store.
There you go. Christmas in July.
Happy to be back in the saddle. That's how you know it's a good vacation, is when you get home and then you're happy to be home, ready to jump back into everything. So it was just perfect.
Well, Amazon Prime Day starts tomorrow, so it is like Christmas in July, right? So for all of you non-Amazon haters, I know there's a lot of Amazon haters out there, but for those of you who are not, Christmas in July tomorrow. Worm flooring down does your trailer roof. Leaky roofs are a very common problem in horse trailers. Worm's flooring revolutionary silicone-based coating creates a barrier against heat and wet. It seals your roof and stops leaks before they start, and it reflects back nearly 90% of the nasty UV rays, keeping your trailer or barn up to 60 degrees cooler on a blistering day. So ditch the duct tape and buckets and invest in a long-lasting peace of mind with Steel and Chill. They call it Seal and Chill. It's applied by pros for a flawless finish, and it's only $7.50 per square foot. That's a steal for a cooler, drier, happier trailer and RV, which means happier horses and people. And with the amount of rain and sun and heat we've been having this year, this is a perfect time to get this done. Head over to wormflooring.com to find a dealer near you. That's W-E-R-M flooring.com.
Joining us now is Auditor Kelly Jones, who I'm so glad wrote in. You know, we've been talking a ton about saddle fitting. And Kelly's like, excuse me, bridles. And I was like, oh, light bulb moment. Of course we have to have Kelly come on the show. And Glenn so graciously kicked the ball my way for this interview today. As we all know, he has bridled one horse in his entire life.
Yeah, I don't do the bridles. Jennifer does the bridles. That's what keeps me a horse husband. That's my line. Right
That's
there.
The limit.
It's my line in the sand.
So, Kelly, thank you for joining us on the show today. Tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you became a listener.
So I'm all the way over in sunny England. I'm actually in the south of England, near the coast in West Sussex. I've been connected to horses all my life. I've absolutely adored them, ridden since I can remember, and had many horses. I started listening to the show because actually I was coming over to the US to be a guest speaker at Equine Affair, that again we can talk about later on because we have a very exciting announcement about that. And then I also have been on the Dressage radio show talking about bridle fitting on there. But it's not just dressage horses that need to worry about bridles. It's everyone from Western pleasure riding to dressage to eventing. It can really impact your horse.
That's a fantastic segue for my first question. So let's start at the top with headpieces. What should we be looking for, regardless of the discipline, in traditional, anatomical, or even Western styles? What should we be looking for in the headpiece?
So I wanted to really talk about it as like an owner looking at your horse, because obviously there are bridle fitting qualifications out there and you can get a professional out, and they are really useful. But especially in the US, they're so few and far between to have proper qualified ones, just like the certified saddle fitters that they were talking about. It's exactly the same with bridle fitters. Anyone can call that. So educating the riders would help. So I always say to customers, take a stand back, look at your horse like you've never looked at your horse before, and look at its anatomy. Do they have big ears? Like there's a really important joint on the horse's head. So if you stand beside of your horse and look at it where the headpiece would go, there is like a bony protrusion about 2 inches back from your horse's ear, 2 to 1 inches. And that's called the atlas, or the wing of the atlas, which is actually the first vertebrae C1. And you can actually run your hands sort of underneath, round, up to your horse's ear, and you'll physically be able to feel the bone and how much space you have between the ear and the wing of the atlas. And it's the biggest bugbear that I see of people going, okay, I need an anatomical headpiece for my horse. And they just go out and buy anyone and chuck it on their horse, and they think, okay, that's better. But actually, sometimes that can be doing more discomfort to the horse if there isn't space. I like to explain it for when you're riding in English. Ideally, you don't want to fit the saddle too far back, too long. Like, you wouldn't put an 18-inch saddle on a 13-2 pony. And it's the same with width of headpieces. So you really don't want them to go too wide. So sometimes I actually say to clients, I really prefer the traditional, like if I had a choice of a very badly fitting anatomical or a traditional headpiece that or crown piece that goes over with no padding, I actually prefer that because it's fairly narrow. And there's actually the space between the C1 and the ear, it sort of fits in that. And then the same with the Western. The Western actually, although they don't do necessarily to do a lot of padding over the headpiece, they're never as wide as some anatomical ones on the market. And I always just say to customers, just take a stand back and look. You've bought one with a cutaway ear. Is actually giving ear clearance out the whole ear, or is it just throwing your eyes off going, oh, there's ear clearance at the bottom, but then you look at the top and it's actually pushing top of your horse's ears? So you could just sort of take a second look and see and assess yourself how it's fitting.
So would it be fair to say, when in doubt, go with a skinnier crown piece there?
Yeah, within reason. But yeah, sure. Now I think having a skinnier one and ideally padded, but mm-hmm. sometimes that's just easier said than done. And you don't necessarily need to be spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars if you don't necessarily, sometimes you don't need to, like right. In the perfect world you could. But yeah, I don't mean throw out your bridle straight away, but sometimes I find people see an expensive bridle hanging in the shelf and they go, well, that was obviously going to be the most comfortable for my horse. And then sometimes I look at a client and I go, God, I wouldn't have done that if I was you.
So let's work our way down the bridle. You know, nosebands have kind of been a hot topic as of late. Mm-hmm. What's the point of a noseband, and what really is the proper fit to a noseband? How do I, as the owner rider, know, outside of, you know, the little old school two finger rule underneath the chin, how do I know that noseband is fitting properly?
So obviously there's so many different styles of nosebands out there. I would say people always go, oh, I don't ride in a noseband, but there has been studies that have shown that the noseband actually does really stabilize the bridle. If done up correctly, with the two fingers fitted flat on the horse's nose, it stabilizes the bridle. You watch slow motions, especially if horses jumping without a noseband, and the movement that the cheek pieces have is quite significant. So just like the use of the brow band is to stabilize the headpiece and the cheek pieces. The noseband does that job as well. It also can give stability to the jaw. So with a horse, I like to put it in, sometimes a horse prefers to have a seatbelt on, and that the seatbelt doesn't necessarily need to be tight. When you're driving, you hardly feel it's there and you can freely move around. But then if they do suddenly need it and the horse spooks forward and you have to quickly grab your reins and pull back, it just adds that little bit of cushioning. Some horses want even more stability, and then that's where you have, I'm not a huge fan of the traditional drop nose bands, but the more modern drops, I do something called a four-ring drop, or I personally really love Grackles, which in America you call cross nose bands. They've actually been proven to have the lowest peak pressure on the front of the nose. So there are lots of great options. As in fitting your nose band, it really depends on which style it is out there. But the main thing you want to keep is you really don't want it to be sitting on your horse's cheekbones. So you want a good clearance of two fingers below and two fingers back, especially with a cabestan or crank. But the really big thing I always say to customers, especially with the brand new research that's come out in November time, is always having some sort of padding behind the jaw. The research that most recently came out shows that's actually more pressure. If you put a pressure mat all the way around the horse's nose, there's more pressure behind the jaw than in front of the jaw, so in the front of the nose, which is really quite interesting to think about. So if you go into like a hunter ring, you'll see a lot of cabestan nose bands where their buckle is done up right underneath the jaw and there's no padding there. So I just say, well, you can try and put a pad on there, or people really don't like them, but crank nose bands, if they're done up correctly, ideally without any rollers, but with the correct tightness, they are actually a lot more comfortable for the horse because you've got that symmetrical jaw pad underneath.
Mm-hmm. And does that also help with pressure distribution, I'd imagine? Yeah.
With the nose band tightnesses, that is such a contentious subject. I put on a couple months ago, I put on a couple of reels of when the new FEI nose band gauge came out, and I had over 500,000 views on it, and it all went very crazy. So the FEI new nose band gauge measures up to 1.5 centimeters, or no, a finger and a half, which is just such a stupid European thing of, oh, let's measure a finger and a half, which I will say, well, stuff that, I always do two fingers, and it's flat fingers on the nose. Right. Some people really lose their minds because you Google it and there's a lot of photos of them being stacked. Mm-hmm. But there is actually zero scientific evidence between the stacked fingers, and we think it originated from just a blog post and someone's measured it wrong, to the point then some people go, oh well, there's another nose band gauge called the ISSI nose band gauge that's been around for years, and they go, well, why can't you use that? And I was like, well, that's the same, it's equivalent to two flat fingers. Just FEI just wanted something a bit more easy to use and easy to slip through, because often the horses don't like the green gauges. Sure. And they're quite harsh when you're using them. But yeah, it's two flat fingers. You can go looser, but then sometimes if you go too loose, the nose band becomes unstable and then sometimes rubs the horse.
Mm-hmm. I'm learning so much. I'm just loving it. So,
but it figures the FEI would do it just a little differently than...
Well, you know.
Oh, well, they've also, because they were about £20 each, and so, yeah, I think FEI have made an awful lot of money because a lot of people got those nose band gauges. Mm-hmm. I've got two of them. I'm forever losing them. They're very easy to lose. But to be honest, I've played around with them. I've done a couple of videos, but I'm still just fitting two flat fingers. I think that the reason why they had to bring that in is because obviously people's fingers do vary.
Well, yeah, mine are twice the size of Ashley's, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good thing you don't bridle horses. So let's refocus to go back to the owner rider of it all. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see people making when they're getting a new bridle for their horse, let's say?
I'm going to guess nose band too tight.
Yeah, nose band too tight. They brow bands too small. I have a big bit of a bug there with brow bands that are padded because doesn't benefit the horse at all. Mm-hmm. And
but they look so
bulky.
Pretty.
You could add crystals for that. Come on. Len, why are you sure you don't want a pink crystal brow band?
I remember when we were in the tech business when the padded brow bands came out and they were making them two-tone and they were all pretty and everything. And we made a lot of money because that became a fad. But that was back, 30 years ago. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, you can do, but a brow band too small. I always like to say, if you can pop your hand flat on the horse's head and run your hand up, can you easily pass under the brow band, whatever style it is, because it will potentially, if the brow band's too tight, it will pull your headpiece onto your horse's ear. Mm-hmm. As I said, headpieces that are shaped don't suit the shape of your horse or too wide. Mm-hmm. And also, ideally, you don't want to have the buckles too high. So when you've got your different bits in and your nose band in, you want to keep your buckle from ideally about the corner of your horse's eye, because mm-hmm. there's not too many sensitive nerves. As soon as you go too high, you get into the jaw joint, which is called the TMJ joint, or TMJ, sorry, and that is a very, very sensitive part of the horse's head. And with my own personal bridles I make, it's sort of the biggest thing that I try and reduce pressure on that area. But you can already reduce pressure by not having a buckle sitting right on top of that joint.
This is so much to take home and unpack, and I encourage our listeners to do just that. I think it's tough sometimes. We get into a routine of, well, this is just, you know, Max's bridal, and we put it on, and just to take a few minutes and step back and really think about how it fits anatomically is a good exercise that we should all probably be doing more than once a year even. So with that, I wanted to touch base on your equine affair announcement.
Yeah, so very excitingly, I am going to be flying back over in November for the Equine Affair in Springfield, Massachusetts for my second year. I didn't do last year, so yeah, I'm very, very excited. I'm actually doing three talks this year. One talk will be very similar to original talk, so it's just on what we've gone through today, but into more detail. I'll have a horse with me and we can have a real good breakdown of bridal fitting. I'm doing one talk on a seminar stage with actually looking at the craft side, because I'm a master bridal maker, so I actually hand make all my bridles to order. And so we're going to be exploring sort of how I make them, the hand stitching side, so the craft side. And then really excitingly, I'm also doing a joint talk with a friend that I've met out in America called Catherine Cook, who is also a bit and bridal fitter out. She's based in Vermont, but she's going to travel down and we're going to do a joint one. She's going to mostly do bitting and I'm going to do a bridal. So we're going to be like a double team. And I'm doing those on the Saturday and Sunday of Equine Affair, but I will probably be there on the Friday floating around as well. So happy to meet any auditors or anyone really at any point.
Awesome. Well, I know a bunch of our listeners go to the Massachusetts one. Mm-hmm. Where can everybody find you?
So my business is Kelly J Leather. My name is Kelly Jones. So that's where I used to be known as Kelly J at school. And I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and I try TikTok, but it kind of frustrates me sometimes.
you and a lot of other people.
Yeah. But anyone, I'm always an open book. I'm happy if someone's just unsure of something, they can just send me a couple of photos of their horse's head and I can just give you a quick overview of what I think from a photo. And I don't charge for that. Obviously, I can't give hour-long phone consultations for free, but any sort of simple tips, I'm always happy to do it, because as in anything in the horse industry, we're never in it to make millions. We just want to make horses more comfortable, and that's my sort of, I love educating, and the reason I love educating is to hopefully show everyone that you can make your horse a lot more comfortable, and yeah, just sort of spread the word of bridal fitting, because it is a relatively new industry. More research we're coming out all the time, so the more education is great.
I'm looking at your pictures here on the Facebook page, and these are beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you make some beautiful stuff.
Yeah, no, I have some amazing clients, but also because I hand make everything, I literally say to them, if you can dream it, I can make it. I have made sparkly purple ones. I've put crystals inside nose bands. I'm working with a horse at the moment that's had quite significant injury with its atlas joint. So I'm making a head collar that especially sits further back. As I said before, my bridle's my own personal horse. He has problems with his TMJ, and that's where it took me down the rabbit hole. So they all have TMJ relief padding. And I could talk about bridles for hours and hours, but yeah, anyone can feel free to take a look on my website. And I am actually running an offer for US customers at the moment that they get free shipping for the week, just because it's taken a bit of, I had to take a step back with all the new tariffs to try and work it all out, but I've now worked out I can ship to, I think this is actually where it all came up on, I can ship to the US now tariff free for my snaffle bridles, which is really, really good. So yeah, the US doesn't need to miss out.
Well, thank you for taking some time to educate myself and our listeners. Glenn, you know, he's definitely going to use all this knowledge now and be bridling his own horse.
I will make sure Jennifer listens to it. That's.
And thanks for being an auditor, Kelly. We really appreciate you coming on and educating us all this morning.
No, that's absolutely fine. I've really enjoyed it.
Your horse's health deserves the highest standard of quality. That's why Nutramax, the makers of Cosequin, maintains their own world-class manufacturing facilities in the United States, where they far exceed what is required of supplement companies. Nutramax works with top universities and researchers in their fields to make sure your horse has nothing but the highest quality ingredients in their supplements. With the mission of improving the lives of people and their horses, each product is backed by more than 80 quality checks and guaranteed to meet label claims, so you can purchase with confidence. With over 30 years behind the Cosequin name, you can rely on Cosequin products for when performance matters. Visit Cosequin.com to learn more.
Well, we have another auditor on. It's auditor day here on a Monday on Horses in the Morning. And today we're talking to Aaron about the HRN Virtual Tevis team. We've mentioned it a couple times before. Hey, Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Ashley. Thanks for having us.
Now, what part of the country are you in?
I live in Vermont.
That's right. You're up there in the Northeast in New England, and which means you have some mighty pretty riding to do your Virtual Tevis.
We sure do, but we also have a ton of deer flies, which are pretty miserable.
I remember living in Massachusetts, and we would have the greenhead flies in July near the coast. Oh my God, they bit. They were so bad.
I swell up so bad from any of those. They're just a nightmare.
And it sucks, Aaron, because you get like 3 good months a year, and one of those months is entirely taken by being eaten alive. You know,
so true.
So you get two months left of the year that are good.
That's right.
The things we do for horses. Yeah,
as Jamie would say, why do you live there?
I'm actually a winter person, so you know, I'm ready for the heat, humidity, and bugs to go so we can get into fall and winter.
There you go. It's a good thing you're a winter person where you live. So to remind everybody what the HRN Virtual Tevis team is and what they do.
Since COVID, the actual Tevis, the endurance ride in California, has had a fundraiser where people really from all over the world can sign up to do 100 miles in 100 days, and you can do it on your own. You can team. The most recent year, they've said, you know, you can walk it, you can ride it, you can be your dog to participate, all to support the trail efforts out there in California.
So, Aaron, how are we doing? Every year that we do this, we end up in competition with damn Stacy Westfall, who I love, by the way, because she's the host of one of our shows. So I'm picking on her out of love. But she always gets a bigger team and they always win and beat us. So how are we doing this year?
Okay, so I have a background in statistics, Glenn, so I came prepared for you with all of the statistics that everyone needs to know.
We'll say we have 1 week left. We're not done yet, but there's only a week left.
We're not done. Yep, okay. Yep, we have until July 13th. Okay. So our team has 29 riders, and we have ridden 3,176 miles so far.
Good for all of you.
Oh, gosh.
Isn't that amazing? Yep. And so the goal is 100 miles in 100 days. So right now, 52% of our team has ridden 100 miles or more. You can keep recording them afterwards. Stacy's team has ridden 3,500 miles. So they're outpacing us by a couple hundred. They have 43 riders, but only 49% of their riders have over 100 miles. So technically,
we are still there.
So our average miles per team member would be higher, wouldn't it?
It's a little bit higher. Yeah. Yep.
Well, we'll take that for a win.
Yeah, exactly. We will.
Take that, Stacy.
We have Karen Chatton on our team, so that helps
us. That's right.
Yeah, does she accomplish?
Karen's queen herself.
Is she about a third of the miles for the entire team, Karen?
I think she's close to 250, but actually Diana Murphy, who I think you've interviewed recently, has even more than Karen recorded. So they're kind of neck and neck. Yeah.
Wow. We had some drivers on that team this year that have racked up the miles too.
We do.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Jennifer wants to apologize. She knew you were coming on today. She wants to apologize. Her horse came up lame.
I know. So things happen.
She was short a few, I think. And she doesn't believe in the whole trading. I know that this has become a thing this year too, where people who have too many miles will give you their miles. She just thinks that's cheating and will not do it. So,
you know, it's all in the spirit of good fun. None of us are doing this for a living or to get to the Olympics. Right?
Yeah. So. How did you do?
We're doing really well. So I have also a young horse like Jennifer. So my mare just turned 6 about a month ago. And so she has done one intro endurance ride so far. But we have about 150 miles recorded for the Virtual Tevis. So we ride a lot right out from the farm. And we're enjoying our months with no snow and getting out there on the trail.
And what flavor is your horse?
Oh, I'm a Morgan person. So she's a Morgan.
Oh, yeah.
And what's her name? Yep. What's her name?
Spice.
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 Oh, wow.
Spice.
Oh, yep.
Is she?
She doesn't really live up to it. She's actually very easy to get along with. So
she's like a mellow paprika, maybe.
That's right. Yeah,
crushed red pepper.
Yeah, no, she's sweet.
Well, we are having Karen on tomorrow. Tomorrow's the endurance day. So you want to, everybody interested in endurance, you want to tune into that. She's having, as far as I think, she's having two new riders to Tevis this year.
Oh, neat.
Because Tevis is in a couple of weeks. So it's always, what, the last week of the month or something like
that. Yeah, it's actually this weekend. They may have moved it up a week this year. So it's Saturday the 12th, and that's why our virtual Tevis ends the day that Tevis is
officially it's this weekend.
Over. So that's how they, yep, it's this weekend.
Oh,
yep.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Yeah. And I think the number of riders was down this year, too, from what I saw for Tevis this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure she'll have to tell you. I haven't actually paid attention
I think
to
it
the
was,
number.
I think I saw like 90-some, and, you know, some years it's 150. So
sure.
It was down. Are you finding the same thing with the rides up there, or do you still seeing as many riders in the Northeast at the shows?
We've had a rider for endurance in the Northeast, so we had a really, really late spring, tons of rain. We had a really bad ice storm here in Vermont where there actually are several competitive trail and endurance rides. So I think everybody's just had a really late start and trails are in tough shape. So unfortunately, we've seen a few rides canceled in our region so far this year, but the rest of the season looks to be strong. We have the Vermont 100 coming up in a couple of weekends, and then there's a big ride in Maine coming up later this summer. You know, Pennsylvania's got a bunch of rides. So we still have a good number of rides on the calendar. It's just a matter of who was ready early in the season to get there.
Now, were you always a distance rider, or did you do a different discipline before endurance?
I came back to riding as an adult re-rider about 15 years ago, and I kind of did baby dressage, and then when I got brave enough, started going out on the trail, and then met a couple of people who were pretty hardcore distance riders and got to crew for them and then volunteered, and I've managed a ride. So I've done a lot more volunteering than actually riding the longer distances myself, but I just love the culture and the sport and the way that the horses are always front and center. So it's been a really nice group to fall into for me. That's lucky for us.
And for one last question, volunteers, what kind of volunteering do you do at endurance ride? If somebody's interested in that, what kind of things are open?
I mean, you could do everything from hospitality, you know, helping make sure there's lunch for riders or water buckets out for horses, to being a scribe for the vet, which I think is one of the best ways to learn about just conditioning your horse generally, whether you're endurance or not. And that's my favorite volunteer job. There's trail marking, there's trail unmarking, there is drag riding where you go out after the ride to make sure nobody's lost out there on the trail and gets left behind. Yeah. And then there's all of the like social media promotions, marketing stuff. So there are so many different ways to get involved. Even if you're never going to ride 10 miles on your horse, it doesn't matter. It's a really welcoming group and people are really willing to teach you. So you don't have to know all of those things ahead of time, but we're always looking for volunteers, as I think most horse sports probably are.
As an early horse husband, when Jennifer was really into showing, I did volunteer. I was always in cooking. I always did the cooking.
Yes.
I like doing the cooking.
Very important.
Yeah, that's right. I could do. I didn't have to deal with horses. I could be away from horses. I like horse people more than horses. So that was perfect for me.
Yes. One of our rides has a cook shack where the horse husband who does the cook shack is one of the most popular people on site.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
True. Yeah. Well, Aaron, thank you for giving us an update. I think, you know, I think we're probably going to come in second to Stacy again. Congratulations, Stacy.
But
we'll get you next year, Stacy.
That's right. And thank you to Richard Alvey, who was the leader of this group. He got all of us organized, which is not an easy feat when you think about 30 horse people all going in different directions. But he got us all
over the country. I mean, nobody's in the same state. So
exactly.
Yeah. And thank you, Aaron, for representing. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Your horse's behavior is a form of communication. If you're dealing with unwanted behavior like bucking, girthiness, or an overall poor attitude under saddle, it might not be a training issue. It could be a saddle fit issue. Saddle Fit for Life has worked with over 300,000 horses and has developed a proven approach to saddle fit that addresses both horse and rider comfort. They're now offering a 7-day free trial of their comprehensive course designed to help you identify and solve saddle fit problems. Don't miss this opportunity to improve your horse's well-being. Click the link in the show notes to start your 7-day free trial with Saddle Fit for Life today.
Very good. Well, I have some random news stories to end the day, something to take your mind off of all the serious stuff happening around the world. And we wanted to congratulate the U.S. eventing team for coming in second at the World Equestrian Festival in Aachen. Woo-hoo. Good job, Boyd Martin, Will Combe, and Philip Dutton, and Caroline Pumuku, whose name we never get right. So sorry, Caroline. But congratulations, second. That's a terrific news.
What a lineup. Yeah. I mean, that's a solid team right there.
It was a good show, and they did a great job. New Zealand was in first and Great Britain in third. On the individual side, Will Coleman came in fourth and Boyd Martin in fifth. Anytime American can finish in the top 10, when you're competing with eventers from around the world, it's a great day.
Absolutely.
Also, on the show jumping side at the Rolex Grand Prix of Aachen, Laura Kraut came in second. So she got a second over there. And there's a lot of jumping going on during the week to come in second. She finished in second place after jumping three faultless rounds on the final day of competition. I mean, I don't know how many rounds they jump, but it's a lot.
Wow.
But she did three faultless rounds and came in second. So good job to her. In a different story, changing gears completely, you know, we do survey show, and you've done survey show with me a couple of times. What's the one thing we always hear about in surveys? There's always a survey every month about this topic.
Coffee.
That's right. Well, researchers tracked the self-reported coughing drinking habits of over 46,000 U.S. adults for a decade.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yes. Participants disclosed how they drank their coffee, whether it was regular or decaf, with sugar or milk or without, if with, how much sugar and milk they put in. And then they went to the National Death Index, which I didn't even know was a thing, and they deduced how coffee consumption has an impact on mortality from all causes, including cancer and heart disease and all that stuff.
After examining
the data, researchers found that drinking... Now, we've had every survey imaginable on coffee. It kills you.
Right.
It makes you live longer.
Right.
It kills you. It makes you live longer. After examining the data, researchers found that drinking 1 to 3 cups of coffee per day was linked to a reduced risk from death from all causes.
Okay.
So 1 to 3 cups a day proved to be good. Now, it has to be black or have minimal added sugar or milk.
So it has to be gross.
Right. So, yeah, basically it has to taste like, ooh. And I know a lot of you drink black coffee. And Jennifer likes really dark coffee, but you put cream in your coffee. She does put cream in her coffee. So it said that a black coffee with less than 2.5 grams or a little more than a half a teaspoon of sugar and less than basically a teaspoon of saturated fat from milk. That's not even any, right? I mean,
I'm going to keep my... Chobani birthday cake creamer.
Yeah, and you probably make it half and half, don't you?
It's like I'll neither confirm or deny.
It actually, if you do it that way, you have a 14% lower risk of dying from any cause, as opposed to not drinking coffee at all, which is me. So I'm gonna die.
Well, it's been nice knowing you, Glenn.
Yeah, I'm on my way out. There was, changing gears again completely, a horse decided to take a walkabout at Monmouth Park in New Jersey. They were walking this horse over for a race. And apparently there was a gap in the racetrack, and the horses from the previous race were galloping by as they were hand-walking this horse over, whose name was Catalina Cruiser. That spooked him. He reared up and got away from the groom, went all the way down the horse path, and guess what? They forgot to close the stable gate to the road.
Oh, come on.
He went out. And by the way, everybody that involved said, that should have been closed. It's supposed to be closed. Apparently, there was nobody standing by the gate. So the horse just went out onto Route 36, which is the main thoroughfare through Monmouth, and went for a walkabout. They caught it at the Dunkin' Donuts a half mile from the racetrack.
He was just trying to get his coffee.
That's right. He was getting his coffee. So half a mile from the racetrack, he was at the Dunkin' Donuts. He needed a donut and a coffee. You know, he does need sugar. apparently.
Clearly.
Yeah. He doesn't drink his coffee black. So they caught him, got him back. He's fine. Everybody's okay. But we do get racetrack getaway stories every once in a while.
I'm glad he didn't hurt himself, because we all know how quickly that could have gone sideways.
I'm really sad about the final story for today that Jamie isn't here, because I love doing this story when she's here, because it totally grosses her out.
Oh, no.
Joey Chestnut has returned as the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Champion once again. He was banned last year. I don't remember
why. What was he banned for?
I don't remember why he was banned. Look that up a while.
Okay, I will.
Was it drugs, maybe? He was on steroids or he was on, so, you know, maybe, I don't know, one of the horse drugs. I don't know why he was banned. But he did very well this year. He won his 17th title. Now get this, with 70 and a half hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes.
Okay, listen, I love a hot dog.
Me too.
My friends know.
If somebody else is cooking it, for some reason, cooking your own hot dog is not as good.
And it has to be on the grill with all the fixings. Yeah. Like, I'm not talking about like some boiled bologna.
Yeah.
I love me a hot dog. 76 and a half in 10 minutes.
It's a lot of hot dogs. It's a lot of bun. You could probably, it's a lot of hot dogs, but that's a lot of bun.
Well, they get them wet, which then is grosser because like those buns are so mushy. I found out why he was banned, and you're going to die. Okay. It's because there was a sponsorship conflict with Impossible Foods.
Oh, that's right. He advertised with them. That's what it was. And they kicked him out. If you're gonna advertise for the imposter, you don't get to eat our hot dogs.
No vegans allowed.
Yeah,
here.
Nathan's was probably really pissed about it. I'm surprised they let him back at all.
That's hysterical.
Impossible won that year. So he did fall short of his record. His record is 76 hot dogs, and that was set in 2021.
Wow.
The female, I think, that won, I forget her name. It was the Asian name, and I forget her name, but she was in it at about, I think, at 30 hot dogs. They're in the 30 hot dog range.
That's still about 20 too many.
I know. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us today. Lisa's going to be, tomorrow we have, what do we have tomorrow? We have endurance tomorrow. And of course, it's pre-Tevis. So that's what we'll be talking a lot about. I know that Karen did some statistics for Tevis this year, put that together with the help of AI, actually. And also the NRHAs later in the week. And then Lisa's going to join me Wednesday and Friday as Jamie's off playing in Colorado. So we'll have a full week of shows for you today. Auditors, hang on. We're going to be talking about household chores and basically how we hate them all.